Hey, all things Montessori. I'm so excited about our episode today. I had the immense pleasure of getting the opportunity to interview two Montessori pillars in our community. I have Simone Davies and Junifa Uzodike on the podcast. And if you don't know who they are, I highly recommend that you find their books and their resources online immediately. They are just absolutely phenomenal women. You may know Simone from the Montessori Notebook blog. She teaches Montessori classes in the Netherlands. And then Junifa, she sits on the executive board of the International Montessori Association, and she runs Fruitful Orchard Montessori in Nigeria. So they first wrote, Simone first wrote The Montessori Toddler, and it was immediately a very big success. So it is such an incredible resource. And so, you know, people read this book and then they were sort of like, well, what's next? And then her and Junifa got together, which they actually talk about on the podcast, and they wrote The Montessori Baby. And then now we have their new book, The Montessori Child, which focuses on ages 3 through 12. I'm so excited to talk about this book, and I really encourage any of you who are interested to pick up a copy. It is such a beautifully thoughtful and well-presented Montessori book. It's almost like a guide, a handbook. It's fantastic. The link is below if you'd like to purchase it. And I've also linked below some other resources so you can learn more about these incredible women. As always, thanks so much for supporting All Things Montessori and listening. I'm so excited for you to hear this incredible interview with Simone and Junifa. Enjoy.
I am so excited today to have two incredible guests on the podcast. They are the authors of the newest book in their sort of trilogy of books so far called The Montessori Child. I have Simone Davies and Junifa Uzodike with me. Welcome, ladies. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're super excited to have this conversation. Thank you for having us.
And I also have somebody else here too. I have Jamie Rue here with me too. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Rachel, it's like old times.
I know, old times, 2018, 2019, whenever that was. So I'm so excited you guys made time to do this. I know that you're on your book tour and you're currently in New York. And, you know, I start this, you know, we have this tradition on All Things Montessori that we start with a Montessori story. And Simone, I already know yours because you came on the podcast. But Junifa, I don't know your Montessori story. So would you be so willing to share?
Of course. So I used to live in the US. I was working in an automotive company as a strategy manager. And my mom owned a school in Nigeria. And so she was visiting and wanted to visit schools here just to get an idea, get some ideas for her school. And I had made arrangements for someone to take her, but it fell through and then I had to take her. And so I took her and we went to the closest school to where I was working was actually a Montessori school. I didn't know anything about Montessori before. And we went and they had this one-sided window where you could observe the class, and I was blown away. I just wanted to know more. And I always think I went for my mom, but it ended up changing my life. And so I got home and ordered some books off Amazon, and I wanted to know more. I didn't have my children yet, so I did some research. I took some workshops, and I just kept wanting to know more. And so I took the 0-3 training in Portland and also attended the Congress. I was pregnant with my first son. I graduated. I had him a few days after graduation. And I just remember at that Congress, there were so many people from around the world, some young and some old. And they would say, oh, you're so lucky to have discovered Montessori before having your child. And so it felt like a responsibility in a way, like, okay, I've been giving this gift and I really have to try it out. And so when I had my son, I tried to apply a lot of the things that I had learned in my training. And it really transformed parenting. Like all of the ideas that I had of parenting were somewhat negative. Like, you know, I always thought about it's really hard, especially the first year. But I actually really enjoyed being with my son in that first year, journeying with him, catching glimpses of his, you know, little abilities and the wonder. And I just wanted, I kept wanting to know more. So before he turned three, I registered for the 3 to 6 training in Perugia, Italy. And I took that training. And just before he turned six, I started the 6 to 12 training in South Africa. And yeah. And then I also started a school in Nigeria, Fruitful Orchard Montessori, again, just as a way. You know how when you discover something amazing and you want everyone to also know and share, you know,
yes,
thought about it. So I've just always wanted to share this experience that I feel gifted or lucky to have discovered or have run into. So that's my story.
I love that. I read a passage in the book about your introduction, because I've never met you, and it said that you said something about your son being in utero and how like Montessori, what, you know, you were learning about it. And that is so cool, because it's such like a birthing experience when you go through the Montessori program. I feel like I came out a different person. So I think that's so awesome that your son was literally being developed.
He was in all those lectures. Like, he listened to all the lectures, like all the theory lectures. So yeah,
I love it.
I did the same with my oldest in my elementary training. She got to sit and hear, and I feel like it has like impacted, you know, her formation, you know, having been around all that Montessori energy from before birth.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Oh, that was so awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I would love to know how you two met, your sort of, you know, your story of how you wrote these books together. Because Simone, correct me if I'm wrong, you wrote The Montessori Toddler first, and then came Baby, then came Child, right? Okay. So I would love to know how you guys got together.
Yeah, it's really cute, actually, because I think Jennifer and I were one of the first people blogging about Montessori. And so it was easy to kind of come across each other. And Jennifer had reached out and we'd had some contact. And then Jennifer sometimes comes to Amsterdam for the AMI board meetings, because she's on the AMI board. And we'd met once. She'd been in my classroom to visit. And the second time she came, I invited her for a meal at my house, because I thought, if she's traveling from Nigeria, maybe rather than going to all these dinners that they get taken out, maybe she just wants a home-cooked meal. And she said yes. And I'm like, oh, how exciting, I get to hang out with Jennifer. And I just got back from the book tour for the Montessori Toddler, and people were already asking about the Montessori babies, like, what about the first year? You know, what do we do then? And I said to Jennifer, oh, I'm interested to write the book about the toddler, but I'm about the baby, except that my children were about 18 months when I found out about Montessori. I never used a floor bed, and I really feel like it would be hard to say this is what we recommend if I've actually not lived the experience. And so I'm looking probably to collaborate. And she said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I was on the airplane thinking, I need to write a book about babies, about Montessori babies. And so literally we both got a piece of paper and we sketched the outline, and we wrote that book during COVID with lots of WhatsApp calls and lots of, are you there? Oh, I can't hear you. You know, this is like how it goes. But when we collaborate, you know, we actually realize that we are very alike in how we write. And sometimes, like, Jennifer says beautiful things and I just translate it in a way that's a bit more easy to read, you know, and make it really accessible for families. And so we say it's like a symbiotic relationship. And then the child book came after that, because everyone's like, what happens now? You can't leave us hanging. And so now we've like got the trilogy, Montessori Baby for the first year, and then the Montessori Toddlers 1 to 3, and then the Montessori Child goes from 3 to 12. But everyone said, like, what about adolescents? Like, oh, we didn't forget that. We put like a really big chapter about adolescents in the Montessori Child book, so you won't, you know, need another guidebook. So it really goes through now the first three planes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. I have all of them. I'm actually, I have an 8-month-old son, so the Montessori Baby has just been my Bible, basically. I read it when I was pregnant. I'm reading it now. I actually just gave it to my nanny because she wants to read it. Like, it's just, it has helped me so much. And I will just say, this new book is, it's so beautiful, so thoughtful. So congrats on that. It's lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you kind of answered my question, but my next question was kind of, you know, I as an elementary person, you know, I think in terms of 6 to 12. And so when I was sort of curious when I saw this book that it said 3 to 12. So what was your thinking in coming up with what age range you were going to go with?
So initially, it was actually from our publisher. Initially, we had thought, we were thinking about a 3 to 6 book and then a 6 to 12. But they felt like, you know, parents, as their children get older, are not so much seeking out parenting books unless they have specific problems or that they are trying to address. So they just, it was really just the publisher saying, is there a way to put it together and make it one book from 3 to 12? And actually, as we started writing it, it made sense because a lot of the things that you're dealing with from 3 to 12, they're the same. They're different approaches, but we could just address them and, you know, talk about them in a way that is, and many families have a 3 to 6 child and might also have a 6 to 12 child, so they might not want to read two separate books. So it made sense, but it really started out as just a decision from our publisher, but it worked out. Yeah.
I agree. I think it works beautifully. And I was, when I was looking through it, because at first I was like, oh, interesting. But I do think there's a ton of similarities. And I actually used to get kind of a little bit frustrated when I would have children in my class, but I was like, I don't know. You're still kind of in the first plane. Like, I don't know what to do with you. So
I think they've got a leg in each side, each plane. Totally. And so sometimes they're still a first plane child and the next day they can be the second plane child. So, and it's so different from every child, you know, when they make that transition and how it will look. So I think just like each area, like from language development, we go start with a 3 to 6 child, and this is then how it would look around 6 to 12. And then everyone's on their own timeline. So it's one child who is 4-year-old might already be in the developmental stage of that second plane child for their movement or something and beyond. So it kind of means that you can meet every child where they're at without, you know, feeling like, oh, I don't know what's next in case my child's already past that.
Right. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that stood out to me about this book is kind of the social aspect of it, like how to talk to your child. I see so many things online about like how to respond or the whole gentle parenting movement, those things, like how to actually talk to your kid. So I thought that was really interesting and starting even like my baby's not talking to me. So starting even when they're young, like, you know, talking about like, I'm going to, you know, talking about consent, I'm going to take your diaper off and those kinds of things. But one thing that struck me was two things, actually, and I want to talk about both. Your concept of having family meetings, much like we do in the classroom. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit more and how, like, you know, how a family could start to, maybe if they're not really doing that, maybe they can't all sit down at the dinner table, you know, a lot during the week. Like, how could they kind of like understand why that is important? Because that struck out to me.
I think that idea came about really because of in the classroom, the 6 to 12-year-olds, they sit down at the beginning of the school year to make those agreements in your classroom, and they make a living document of what that's going to look like and really drill down. They don't rush through the process like, oh, someone says, I think we need to respect each other. Okay, well, what does actually respect mean for you? What does respect mean for you? And actually articulate it all. And then when you can always come back and review them, are these working for our classroom or are they not? And Juniper has some classroom agreements that are more like, do we care for ourselves, the environment, and others, and does it fall under that? So it can look in many different ways. So it started from there and how families can then do that. So in my home, we didn't actually have official family meetings that every Saturday we did this, but there were definitely moments in breakfast time or whatever, or not maybe to breakfast because we're not awake, but at some time during the day where we could sit down and say, oh, I've got something that I'd like to discuss with you. And just planting the seed, or we have a list on the fridge of things that we want to talk about at neutral times so that we never like feel like we're negotiating on the spot about something that they feel is unjust, because we know how the second plane child particularly needs to know that's just and everything's fair. But that we say, oh, that sounds really important to you. We'll put it on that list and we'll discuss it when we're all calm, you know? So I think it's such a beautiful way that families can then start to make agreements with their children as opposed to house rules. I definitely used to use the word house rules, and I think it applies more for young children where we're setting like the boundaries and the limits, but really from 3 to 6 to, and then into 6 to 12 is becoming much more collaborative, and it's an agreement. And when families make an agreement, the child's more likely to want to comply because they've been in charge of making that. And so the parent or the caregiver can just say, what was our agreement about, you know? And then they have to fill in the blank, and because they made the agreement, they'll be like, okay, yeah, we made that agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can just hear some of my parent friends or, you know, people that might not be in the Montessori space kind of being scared to ask their child, like, you, one of the examples you brought up was like, they can pick a restaurant or something, or they can pick what, you know, what to eat that week or something, and being kind of nervous to ask that question because like, who knows what the answer is going to be. I think just like opening the conversation, starting with things that are light like that, but then maybe going into more, like you said, like something that might cause somebody to get angry or something. And then you kind of, I don't know, like regulate it makes it normal to talk through those things rather than letting it build up and fester.
Well, I was going to say that even for that example about choosing a restaurant or what to eat, like in Montessori, we offer the children freedom within limits, right? And we offer them choices. So you may, instead of saying, what restaurant would you like to eat? You might offer three choices and say, these are the restaurants that we're considering. Which one do you think? So we can limit the choices to options that feel comfortable to us, but we're still giving them an opportunity to feel like they're contributing and they feel like they're not always being told what to do and they have to follow. They're getting a chance to make a decision and to be part of, you know, making the choices for our family. So I think I feel like a lot of times parents are afraid to give children the opportunity to make a decision, but just knowing that we can curate the options, we can put boundaries that feel comfortable for us.
And that they're age appropriate decisions too. We're not going to ask them if we should buy this house or not buy this house, or, you know, where we're going to go to school. Although when my children were at the end of their elementary years in Holland, they have an exam and they get to look at their schools. And so we all went to look at the schools and I gave them the choice which school they'd like to go to and just said, these were not my favorite ones for these reasons. And they didn't then come to the top of their list, you know? So it's also guiding them to make bigger decisions, but with a lot of guidance. That's all we are. We're guides even at home.
What I really like about this approach too, and it's something that I hope, I'm so glad for this book to help parents to be able to do, because I think like really treating children like people is really important, not miniature humans or not this, you know, possession or something, but really like you have your thoughts and you are a contributing member of this family. And I'm going to treat you with the same respect I would treat a coworker or a friend or someone else and have those kinds of conversations even within the social structure of our home. So having family meetings or at least even just these conversations of, hey, you know, your contribution is important. I'm kind of curious about what you'd like for dinner or where you want to go to school. And we can have that relationship of respect from the beginning is so good for those children, not only for their development, but for how they start to interact with others, right? If that's happening at home. So I just really did appreciate how you outlined that and made it sort of approachable for parents. Because sometimes I think parents feel like if my child's unhappy, I'm not being a good parent, or if I've set a limit, I'm not being a good parent. And so reinforcing that limit within those choices is so helpful. And you guys did it in such a way that was so accessible, I think, in the book.
There's one other thing as well, is that we talk about having like a parenting meeting once a week as well between whatever parents or caregivers are running that kind of show. So we might be with parenting partners. So if a grandparent, for example, does look after your child once or twice a week, then we should be checking in with them to see how we can support each other. Because otherwise what often happens is we're on this Montessori path and someone might not be on board with the Montessori approach, but how can we come to a way to work together to support each other? We always say in the classroom, teach by teaching, not by correcting. But how often have we corrected our partner or someone else saying, oh, we don't say good job anymore? And, you know, then they actually just feel demoralized, not part of the parenting team. And really, when we check in and just separate from the children, okay, what are our plans for the week? It could be all of the logistics, who has to run someone to different practices, or do the children have what they need? And then we can discuss it in a calm and clear way. And again, come back and review what's working. How did that go? Can we do it better next week? And yeah, just keep iterating. So I think the same thing actually also applies for everyone on the parenting team.
I love that. And I mean, I'm married to a non-Montessorian, like my partner, you know, he's just along for the ride, super supportive. But I definitely get what you mean. Like sometimes I'm just very quick to be like, oh, we're not doing that. And he's like, and it's not like, you know, I'm not saying it, and it's just things are chaotic. Things are quick, you know, like, you know, you got to keep going. And I've tried to, you know, support my partner and my parents watch the baby only once a week. But I've tried to be supportive, but sometimes I think people can be defensive and feel kind of like, and it's not even that Montessori is complicated. It's just quite different and a little bit, I always think of Montessori, I think it's more thoughtful. That might offend people, but I do. I think it's more thoughtful and it's more about the respect aspect, right? And instead of saying good job, saying, wow, you carried that bucket of water, you know, like, and it's just it's a switch in your brain. Right. But I have found, that with certain people, defense, because it's like, oh, well, I'm not doing it that way. I must be doing something wrong. And it's like, no, you're not doing something wrong. It's just, I think we should do it this way. But I personally want to get better at saying, and this is why, or taking the time, like you said, like not in the moment, maybe later, or setting aside a parent meeting to be like, and this is why I think these things, like, what do you think? You know,
you can use observation as well. Like, oh, I noticed at mealtime, you were really upset when they threw their food on the ground. That must have been hard. And again, kind of acknowledging them. And often they might come, yeah, I was just like really distracted because I come in from work and wasn't feeling calm. And then you're like having a great conversation, as opposed to, again, just feeling like you're giving instructions to your partner who doesn't want to be talked down to. Yeah,
totally. No, it's so true. The other point I had about what I thought was really interesting about the social element of being with a child was your whole chapter on talking about difficult things, talking about death and money and stealing and sex and bodies and all of those things. I really appreciated that chapter. And I thought you outlined it so beautifully on how and examples, because I think those things are really difficult to talk about. Personally, my grandfather passed away a few months ago, and my cousin, she has a 9-year-old, and she was really struggling with how to talk with her about it. And I felt for her in that moment, because it's a tough thing. So anyway, I loved that chapter. How did that come to be? Why did you include that?
That part of the book was really Simone. So when she works with parents in her classes. And so I think for a while, every time they would ask a question, or she would observe something that they would do, or a discussion that came up, we had a spreadsheet with all the topics that we could talk about. And so she would populate, and I would also populate a few that came to me. And then she answered them, I think. So.
Yeah. And I think it was just about the same principles about how we talk with respect to our children. We give honest, simple, clear answers that are age appropriate. So we don't need to give a 3-year-old child the same explanation as we'd give to a 12-year-old child, but also often answering the question, oh, what do you already know about that? How are you feeling about that? To see where they're at and what's going on in their mind, so that we're not kind of giving them too much information or flooding or actually adding to their fears that they weren't even thinking about that. They just actually saw something in front of them and had a very simple question. And we think, oh, we need to talk about this big topic. But the grief one, I do work with families in my classes, and usually their children are under 3, but they often have older children. I also, when I'm out with friends, I make notes on all the things that they're struggling with. And it's a very practical book. And I just always thought there has to be a Montessori way to deal with that. And because I don't work in the classroom with 3 to 6 or 6 to 12 age children, during COVID, I did my assistant certificate in 3 to 6, 6 to 12, and 12 to 18. And when we were having our lectures, I was just like, okay, in the home, that might look like this. In the home, that might look like this. And I'm translating it because there's no Montessori at home book that really covers these things. So it was a lot of research and the resources that I found helpful. We couldn't cover everything in a lot of detail. So here's a book that we found useful and you can go further in, but this gets you started on those conversations. And the grief one came up often in our class. And, you know, in Holland where I live, they actually navigate death quite beautifully. They're very practical when they're explaining to a child in the family. And so I actually got inspiration and information from lots of sources, but what would apply in a Montessori way. And then rather than saying they've gone to a long sleep, you know, because we're trying to make it feel nice, we're just very factual. They died, because otherwise they might start to worry that if my mum and dad go to sleep, maybe they're going to die too. So it has to be very clear with a young child and see what their questions are. And like if someone does pass away and the child's quite young, how are we going to have that memory stay alive, for example? And so you could make a beautiful book about them. You could, when you're in the grocery store, to say, oh, I'm thinking about that person today, and I know that those chocolates were their favorite thing, so let's buy them and just, you know, really honor them today, especially things like that. So again, a very sensorial learner, you know, how can we still keep them alive and have memories like that? So that grief one was just also very practical, but a way of honoring. And I think it's a very Montessori way of approaching the conversations about death.
I agree. I appreciated that whole section. I just was sort of blown away by that. And I will say, this is something else I wanted to point on. I love that you have sources. And if you want to learn more, check out this book. that's great, because I think, I'm not going to speak for all parents, but me personally as a parent, love information, love it. Like, I give me that book, I will read it. So yeah, love that. So you're saying, you were talking about, Simone, you were saying how there's like no Montessori at home kind of guidebook. And that's what I kind of looked at this as. And I think Jamie and I, we've talked about this before, like, you can literally see the like undoing of the work you've done in the classroom, like as soon as the child gets picked up in the car. And it's no one's fault. I mean, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying it's different, right? And you're like, oh my gosh. So I think this is such a great kind of guide and bridge from classroom to home. Is that sort of what you were envisioning a little bit when you were writing it?
Yes, it was. And if you'll see that we tried very much to focus on how to live Montessori. We're not suggesting to parents to recreate the classroom at home. It's just a way to understand your children, to support their interests, to collaborate with their educators. So you're really not trying to do what a Montessori school would do, whether your child goes to a Montessori school or they don't. Either way, you can leave Montessori. You can get to understand your child better. You can learn how to observe, look out for how they might be changing. You know, when you see them doing something, instead of not knowing what they're doing or not knowing how to, instead of reacting, you understand. You understand that, oh, he's rude, or he's getting a little more, he used to be so orderly, now he's throwing everything, he's scattered, or he wants to do this work that takes up all the space in the house. You know, oh, maybe he's getting into another plane of development. And then you know how you can make changes to your home environment, you know how you can support them. Or they have an interest. Maybe they tell you, I'm doing this research in school, or I'm learning this in school. You don't necessarily have to go and buy the Montessori material. You can guide them. You can sow seeds. You can provide an environment that allows them to explore. You can help them, you know, that love for learning that they are already developing and cultivating, you can support that. You can help them acquire independence. I know many people think about Montessori and they think about independence, but usually they're thinking about functional independence, how to do things, which is a big part, especially in the first plane. But we also want them to have independence in thinking, how to think, how to make decisions, how to decide what is right and what is wrong, how to do practical things. Like Simone always gives the example of how to do your taxes in the fourth plane. That's something that a child has to learn eventually, right? And I think also just helping parents see that our role changes as our children grow, and knowing what your role is and enjoying every stage. That's really what we wanted. Like, parents to be able to feel like, I understand what's going on, because I think the hardest thing is like not knowing what's happening. Like, you're like, wait,
oh, yeah.
And with our children, it can feel that way because they're constantly changing. Like, it's almost like as soon as you master the baby, they're a toddler. As soon as you figure out the toddler, oh, wait, they're a child, you know, and they're changing. So feeling like you understand, you know, I feel like it helps. That has been the biggest gift for me with my children. And that's really what we wanted. And then both of us are teachers, so we work with children. I've worked with the Children's House 3 to 6, and now I work with elementary. So I understand completely that feeling of doing something in school and the children go home and it's a completely different, like, it's completely different. And
yeah.
To support a child's development, we can do a lot as guides in school, but really, if the family, if the home does not support it, I feel like we will never be successful in really helping children reach their potential. So really, that's what we were trying to create, something that allows families to support their children and, you know, work hand in hand with guides or not, but to help their children reach their potential.
And I would just add one thing as well, is that Juniper wrote an amazing appendix about activities for this age group as well. And when you look at the activities, it's not buying one Montessori material, because like Juniper said, we're not replicating a classroom, but you provide meaningful work for your children with things from around your home, following their interests, then you'll find children that are much more self-regulated, that they feel passionate about things, they can deep dive, again, moving from functional independence through to mental independence in the second stage. And we're really proud that you don't have, like, that that appendix, you don't need anything. It makes Montessori accessible to any family, no matter, it doesn't, not just a private school kind of approach.
And in addition to that, I think also that's the reason why, regardless of where you are, Montessori is universal. Like, so whether you are in Nigeria or you're in Amsterdam or you're in the US, wherever you are, you can actually apply the ideas without feeling like, oh, I can't access that. You can also make it culturally responsive. You can, we don't prescribe to you that your space must be like this. We talk about what are the ideas, like what are the considerations, and then you can take those considerations and ideas and interpret it in a way that feels good to you, or like go with your culture or your preferences. And I think that, you know, those are the things that we consider, and I think that make the book special, if we may say that ourselves.
I think you can absolutely say that. And I loved those resources there. And I particularly love it too, because it's something I've said for years, like I can do Montessori without the materials. It's a lot easier in the classroom to have all those materials. They're excellent tools, but they aren't the heart of this work, right? And I think that's what you both were able to really get across so beautifully, that the heart of this work is our approach to the child, our trust of the child and their ability to self-construct, and how we're responsive to their characteristics in a way. And so you really sort of unlocked a door, I think, to that, for that accessibility for parents to really, you don't need the bead frame, you don't need the, you know, golden beads, you don't need the grammar rocks. Like, you can do this at home in the way that you approach your child and the way you use your home environment. So that was really fantastic. I wanted to, we talked, you mentioned before, like the fourth plane. And so I'm the parent of two children in the fourth plane. I have a 20-year-old and a 23-year-old. So when's that book coming out?
Well, hopefully, you know, we've given you enough of a basis, but we're open to hearing, Jamie. I also have two fourth plane children, and, you know, it's being their guide. It's still, they're still checking in, but they're really now being an adult in the world. And I kind of am so impressed by actually how much they manage to work out for themselves. And then occasionally I'll get a phone call saying, how do you organize health insurance? And then I'd be like, oh, it sounds like you've got a question. You want to do that next time you come visit, and I can sit next to you while you're filling out the form, or do you need more help than that? And I don't actually have to type the form for them or whatever, but it's just they feel comfortable. And yeah, taxes. Okay, let's talk about that together. And yeah, even the unprepared environment is what I noticed the most in the fourth plane. So they've moved from the prepared environment through the first three planes, and then they get out into the real world, and it's a bit more rocky because someone's not there responding in the same way that their adult might have learned to respond. And so when they've had a hard week, it's just, yeah, you're having a hard time. It's exactly the same as when my toddler has a hard time in the classroom. I hold the space and I help them. And I say, do you want my advice on this? Or do you just need someone to listen right now? And so it's actually the same, but just the characteristics of the child will change and they're going to the next level. And then the individuation is, I think, the biggest difficulty, I think, the letting go. The attachment's really easy for me anyway. And the letting go, when you're like, I actually am not going to ask about that. I'm going to trust that they have got this. So I think there are a few tips anyway for those of you with fourth plane children. And oh, actually, also, if they're under your roof, how can you give them the responsibilities that a fourth plane child needs, even if they're under your roof? That would be too.
And that's the dance, right? It is. It's been interesting to me to recognize how much of a parent I still need to be. I don't know what I had, some idealistic idea that they'd head off and be fully, you know, there are four planes. That's what I keep, you know, that prefrontal cortex is not fully formed, but no, that's
totally
super, all of that is, yeah. Thank you. That's good timing for me to hear that, Simone. Thank you.
Of course.
No, I love it. I mean, we always talk about how Montessori is an aid to life, and it transcends, like it just goes throughout all of it. And I love how you keep saying how, like, going back to what we said before about how this book is 3 to 12, because a lot of it is linked. Like, I just think it's so incredible how so many things are just continually linked. When Jamie, you were just talking about, or I guess Simone was talking about letting go, I feel like parenting is just a constant stream of letting go. Like, that's how I feel. I feel like I'm just like, I mean, my baby's only 8 months old, so like, I guess like it's just going to keep happening, but I just feel like I'm constantly like letting go, you know, all the time. So I love that. And I think that this is such a great, you know, there's lots of like takeaways from this book that I think are really easy to implement, which I think is what parents are looking for. Because I'm not sure, did you guys see that article in The Atlantic? Okay. Okay. Well, that article was interesting. But I thought it was really incorrect because it was saying, I thought it was incorrect on a lot of things, but it was saying how Montessori is a fairy tale. And I just think that couldn't be further from the truth. And going back to the appendix, having those things that you do not need to spend thousands of dollars on beautifully handcrafted wooden whatever. Montessori is actually the opposite, because it's all about real life and what you have around you and like having your child in your life, in your space, rather than creating a space for the child. I just think people get it so wrong.
Jennifer hasn't read it, but actually in my drafts folder is a newsletter in response to the Atlantic article.
Oh my God, I can't wait to read that.
Page, definitely. And so they did talk about how it's for affluent families, that it takes more work. And yeah, hopefully this guidebook shows that it may take you a little bit more time to set up your environment so that your child can do that themselves. But everyone who's worked in Montessori or has Montessori children at home know that that preparation of the environment means that you have a three-year-old who can put on their own coat, who can make their own food. And even they kind of made a little joke about kids making their own pancakes.
They did.
Satisfied is that child who can make their own pancakes. They're so capable. And like, if I can make pancakes for myself, I can make them for my family. I feel like I belong. I have a purpose and I make a contribution to the family.
I mean, giving a child that ownership, I just think they totally missed the mark. But in contrast, this book totally hits the mark head on. And, you know, it really shows parents, caregivers, whoever, that it is, if you're interested in it, yes, it will take a little bit. I think it's more almost mental work, because it's sort of like you put in the work. I've always thought this way about Montessori. You put in the work in the beginning, but then you kind of reap the benefits. Like you see it like down the road, you're like, oh, this is great. Like, you know what I mean? Like I saw that with my son, with the way that we did sleeping with him. Like it was a lot of work up front, but now I can see the results kind of like as we're continuing on. So I'm excited that this is out in the world. I can't wait to tell everybody about it because everybody has already been talking to me about the previous two and I've been talking to them. I actually heard about you guys from a friend of mine who isn't even a Montessorian. She bought the Montessori toddler and Montessori baby, and I didn't even have a child yet. And she was just like, this is the best thing I've ever read. I know you're a Montessori teacher. You have to read it.
I think the one thing I think about Montessori is, I would say the word is intentional. Mm-hmm. We're very intentional. And so it just means observing, even if we don't understand. Like I know we're trying to understand, but sometimes we don't understand. But just observing gives us that space to respond rather than react, that Jennifer spoke about before. And intent, yes, in how we respond, but intention in how we set up our spaces. If our child is always coming to us and we're running around trying to blow their nose, then actually if we observe, how can I make nose blowing easier? Oh, in the classroom, we set up a little nose blowing area. We show them how. It might take a little bit more time to show them the first few times, and then they can blow their nose by themselves. So it's intention.
I have a question, which is just for my own. I have three very, very gifted Montessorians on the line, and I'm going to ask. Lately, okay, so my child's 8 months. I want to start doing like hand washing, but he can't stand or crawl yet. So I've been kind of like picking him up, showing him the sink. Like, that doesn't seem right though. Do you have any advice?
So I have a 10-month-old. I don't know if you know.
No. Oh, so sweet.
So my last baby is 10 months old. So I don't know if it's right or wrong, what, like carrying him up to wash his hands. I think that that's okay if it works. What I did in the early with my first three and now with my daughter is that I used to have like a cloth to clean after they finished eating, because they were still like, they had like their little table and they could wipe their hands and wipe the table. I really started hand washing when they could walk.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So, but sometimes you need to wash their hands. So I will take them, and help them wash their hands at the sink. But as part of our process in those early months, when they were still not, I wanted them something that they could do independently without my help. And what I found worked was the cloth. So they could wipe their hands and they could even wipe the table. So from like 9 months, they would wipe their hands and then also wipe the table. And that was the process. And then once they started toddling, I could set up a little hand washing area for them, or in the bathroom, have a stair that they could climb when they were more stable. So that's what has worked for me.
Yeah. And was it you as well that had the little mirror so that they could see their face as they wiped their
Love. Yeah. I love that. Okay. That's perfect. Yeah. Cause I've been so funny. I've started doing it and I've just been like, this isn't it, but I haven't known like what to do. So I appreciate that advice. Thank you so much. Simone and Junifa, thank you so much for coming on All Things Montessori. I am so happy that we got to talk through this beautiful book, The Montessori Child. Everybody, run and go get it. But thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for this beautiful book and this wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having us. I really enjoyed having the conversation with you both.
And thank you for having us. I would add one last thing, and that is that we also featured other families around the world in different circumstances to say Montessori just doesn't work for Jennifer and I. It's not a fairy tale, and this is how you can apply it in an Indigenous setting. If you're in a wheelchair, you know, and lots of different other ways of applying Montessori. So big thanks
Love
to the
it.
That shared their homes with us, and also to the team at Workman who have helped get this book into so many people's hands. They're just like such sweet people, and the illustrator and the book designer who made the book so readable, because many parenting books are just heavy to read, like just text, and this has got a light layout where you can pick it up and read just one section and put it into practice, and it's just so easy to read, and it's also you can just read it from cover to cover. But the illustrations make it really like lovely and beautiful. And so we were saying to schools, you know, give it to your families as a welcome gift and then get them on board if they come into the school, or put them in your parent library and they can borrow them. Or if you want to do it as a fundraiser, the publisher can do like a 40% school discount, and then you could sell them at the full price or at 80% and then make some money for the school. So that's getting the families on board. So you're also collaborating with the families and you can guide them just like you guide the children.
I love that.
I'm really grateful for your real focus on accessibility on so many levels, because I think that's so, I mean, it's just a real key to the work. Montessori is accessible. And so putting that in the book with, you know, making it beautiful, having a diverse kind, you know, all sorts of different families that you explored and talked about, all of that is really powerful, and what, you know, what the movement needs too. So thank you for all of it. It's a joy to look at. I mean, it's just truly beautiful. It's beautiful to have sitting on your coffee table, to page through, like, and then to catch little sentences and words that are like, there's just so many strong little nuggets of things that are powerful, even if you're just flipping through and glancing. And I mean, that matters too, for getting this information to parents and to anyone who's interested, having it be accessible that way too. So well done.
Well done.
It's just a real amazing piece of work. We're so grateful.
Thank you. That was really our hope, you know, that you don't have to, I mean, you know, when you have a young child, you don't want to have to read the whole book before you find something.
Right.
Hope that everywhere you open, like if you just sat down and opened the page, you would find something that you could take away. And even the index, if you were looking for something specific, you could look at the index or look at the table of contents and find what you were looking for. So thank you. That's reaffirming that we were successful in what we were hoping to achieve.
I would definitely say you were successful, and I will link it below so anyone listening can go ahead and get your copy of The Montessori Child.
Thank you so much for having us. That was so fun.
Thank you.